Rebel Force Radio presents Star Wars Oxygen. The music of John Williams.
Red 5, I'm going in.
Like Star Wars itself, the music in the film defied conventional wisdom. At a time when disco was burning up the charts, having a traditional symphonic soundtrack was another huge risk on Lucas's part.
He really understood the genre that I was talking about. It's a group of composers that weren't that well looked upon in the 70s. There was a different attitude toward the old-fashioned symphonic and the scores. And I had a lot of music in the movie.
Hey, Star Wars fans, Jimmy Mack here with you, and welcome once again to Star Wars Oxygen, the music of John Williams. It's Rebel Force Radio's monthly look and listen to the work of the maestro. Can't do this show without the man sitting to my, he's about 2,000 miles away, but it's David W. Collins.
Hey, Jimmy Mack and Star Wars and music aficionados. Welcome to Star Wars Oxygen, the music of John Williams, a.k.a. the return of Revenge of the Sith. Today, what I wanted to do was dive straight into the heart of this tragedy in this movie, because that's really where we left off. We didn't really start talking about what transformation happens to Anakin and what the heart of this movie is, which is, you know, this horrible transformation that he has to go through between, a warrior loving husband and father to be to, you know, the menacing Darth Vader. And that's what I wanted to talk about today.
The scenes that you speak of when that transformation happens really work to a large part by the music that Williams provides.
That's right.
If he doesn't hit the right emotional chords, then the whole thing's going to fall apart. Really, it relies almost 100% on what Williams can provide to it, because a lot of the sequences you're talking about are silent in nature, you know, especially when Anakin is considering, he's in that Jedi temple and he's considering what his move is going to be, while Padme is realizing, you know, something's up. And there's just this connection that they're sharing in the Force, and the music really, really pushes that forward.
Yes. Yes. And I want to that scene that you're talking about is where I want to start. Just before we get there, I also want to do a little bit of show house cleaning. And I want to also tell you, and tell everyone listening, that I have, as of this week, finished my theme tracker, not only for episode 3, which I think I'm going to wait until the next volume to talk about after we have a chance to talk about more of the music, but I went back and I did episode 2 as well. For those of you that remember, when we talked about episode 2, I never did the theme count, theme tracker wrap up, because I was so befuddled, honestly, by the number of music edits and how it all broke down towards the end of the movie, that the way that I had been approaching soundtracks had to fundamentally change. So, Jimmy, you remember back when we were talking about A New Hope, all the way back in 2013 when we kicked off this show, I would sit there and talk about themes and a theme tracker and how many times it was used, and I was constantly going back to the soundtracks, right? And I was like, oh, in this queue that's called whatever, Inner City or something like that,
right,
or the Battle of Hoth. This is where you can find it. And so what I would do back then, especially because almost everything is released for the classic trilogy, is I would go back and I would do a one-to-one comparison between the soundtrack and what was in the movie. And I would go and find it, and I would cross-reference that. That all broke down with Attack of the Clones, which makes sense, right? Because we have the Ultimate Edition of Phantom Menace, and we had the special edition soundtrack releases of 4, 5, and 6, right?
Yes, yes.
When it came to Attack of the Clones, I got really frustrated, and I didn't even get a chance to finish Sith before TFA came out. Mm-hmm. So with The Force Awakens, the way that I do these has totally changed. I do it completely by what you hear in the movie, and I actually just write down the time code of the movie, just in minutes and seconds, but like the time code of the movie where you hear that theme. And if I can reference it on the soundtrack, I will. But if not, then I just don't even bother. I just wanted to complete a theme tracker based on what we were given, even if it was an edit. And so what I did was I went back to Attack of the Clones, started over from the top, And I just decided to say, you know what? If we hear it in the movie, it's going in the theme tracker. I'm just going to ignore soundtracks for now. And, you know, where I can fill in what cue they're contained in on the soundtrack, I will. So that's what I did. That's what I had to do again for Sith. And that's what I'll be doing moving forward on these movies, assuming that we're not going to get full soundtrack releases. If we do, yeah, great.
Come on, what's up? Put out those ultimate editions. Didn't the soundtracks that they released for the 20th anniversary of the films, didn't those sell really well when they released the full soundtracks? And of course, the ultimate edition for The Phantom Menace is, it's amazing. A lot of people ask me, oh, you have that? Can I get a copy of that from you?
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me that. So I know it's super popular with fans at least. So what's the holdup here? Why they obviously it comes down to dollars and cents.
I think it does. I mean, maybe with the resurgence of vinyl, we'll see a re-release of The Force Awakens with more music on it. I really wish we would see that. But again, you know, 1997, when those special edition soundtracks came out, was a very different landscape for record sales and music sales than even 2000 when, was it 2000 or 2001 when the Ultimate Edition came out? I think it was 2000 for mm-hmm. Phantom Menace. And then of course, 02 and 05, when the soundtracks for Attack of the Clones and Sith came out, just record sales were, you know, garbage compared to what they were even a decade before, even eight years before, right? So I think that's why. Hopefully we'll see that, but really, you know, for our discussion for this show, I just want to make sure that we're really focusing on the story and what we hear up on the screen. And so that's where I've taken it. So before we get into episode 3, do you want to hear some numbers on episode 2 since we never covered it?
Okay, so this is the theme tracker, aka the Attack of the Clones music spreadsheet. I love this because essentially, David, what you've done here is you're taking the work of the music editor for the film and completely deconstructing that work. You're breaking it down and creating these spreadsheets very similar to the sort of reference the music editor would actually use while working on the film.
Yeah. I'm really counting themes almost to kind of give a little map, almost a heat map of storytelling beats. Like, you know, what is the main thrust of this theme? I'm thinking the music is going to give us a inside glimpse as to what really is coming out as prominent themes, not just musically, but story-wise, right? Like, where is the film? Where's George's focus, right? Where is it really? Like, with Episode 7, it was clearly Rey's theme, right? With J.J. and John Williams. That was the focus of that movie. It was so dominant. So I'm curious to know, you know, how these themes affect story and, you know, what we're subconsciously hit by music with, subconsciously hit with by the music.
Yes.
And so that's why I want to do them. You know, it's a way of just saying, well, what are the most prominent themes to come out of it? Attack of the Clones is surprising in some ways, but also totally obvious in another. I'll give you a quick quiz. What, in your opinion, is the most dominant theme in Attack of the Clones?
Across the Stars.
You got it. You got it. That is a no-brainer.
Absolutely dominates the soundtrack.
By far. It is, in terms of like the biggest themes in Attack of the Clones, the number of times we hear them, the second biggest theme is the Force theme. Okay. No, it's not. It's not. You know, I'm going to hold off on what the second biggest theme is. That's actually the third biggest theme. But Across the Stars, my point is that it is more than double the amount of times you hear the second place theme. You hear Across the Stars.
I know it. I mean, it's so obvious. I don't think any Star Wars film focuses on one singular piece of music like Attack of the Clones does. And obviously it's Lucas is thinking, you know, he's trying to reinforce the romance between Padme and Anakin. And maybe he was overcompensating a little bit because he wasn't feeling it coming off the screen. Now, of course, I'm right there. I just totally am putting words in George Lucas's mouth. But I mean, maybe that could have been a motivation for why he'd want to use Across the Stars a little more to reinforce that romance is because perhaps by design, it wasn't coming across on the screen as much. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I'm trying to give the romance between Anakin and Padme a fair shake here, but I don't think it's out of line for me as a fan to say that I believe that there was a lot of convincing to be done as far as the actual connection between the two. So, so in that aspect, you'd think, well, maybe Lucas using the tools at his disposal to reinforce that romance really leaned on the romantic theme across the stars.
It really leaned on it. I completely agree with you. Yeah. And it's everywhere. In fact, I counted as 25 times.
Wow.
And I think that that's light. And again, when I do these theme trackers, it's really hard because sometimes he'll be lightly lacing the piece through underscore. And I'm like, do I count that because it's subtle and it's not really there, but I know what he's getting at, or it's a continuation of a previous statement, but not really. So I'm like, do I count it? This is not an exact science, right? But boldly, almost always obviously stated 25 times, including in the end credits, the almost the entire sequence of the end credits. And Across the Stars is the only movie out of seven that's like, or excuse me, episode two is the only movie like this out of all seven films. Across the Stars is almost the entire credit sequence. Once you get past the original, or, you know, the initial main title theme in Rebel Fanfare, you have Across the Stars for almost the entire credit sequence in Attack of the Clones. That is the biggest one. The second biggest one will probably surprise you. The second biggest theme in Attack of the Clones is only in Attack of the Clones, right?
Okay. Okay. It's only in Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
Wow. I'm drawing a blank.
It's really
drawing
subtle.
A blank. I keep hearing that music playing during the speeder chase, but I know that music is only used in that sequence.
It's really, really subtle. I'm going to see if I can bring up an example here. It is the separatist conspiracy, what I call the conspiracy war theme.
Oh,
right?
Yes, of course. But I thought you said it's not the same separatist theme we hear in Ep 1, right?
No. No, it's not. No, it's not the Trade Federation theme. In fact, the Trade Federation theme is only heard twice in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
It's heard once when you see the clones on Kamino, and then it's heard again when in the arena when 3PO's body with a battle droid head is marching in the arena, right? So it's only heard twice, and I think that second one actually was a music edit.
Isn't it also heard as they approach the planet Geonosis in the Queen's ship, in the Royal Cruiser? Doesn't play at that sequence?
That sequence, I believe, is an edit, music edit from the beginning of The Phantom Menace. So there is kind of Trade Federation-esque music playing, but that's, I believe, a music edit from the opening of The Phantom Menace. They just cut that in. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but I believe that's what it is, if memory serves me correctly. No, the Trade Federation war theme. See, now I want to bring it up. Let me play a little bit of what this theme is here.
Do you think it will really come to war?
The dark side clouds everything.
Right?
Impossible
as
to
force.
Bum, 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 bum. Right, it's the da 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 da.
Definitely a track that I identify with episode two greatly. Yeah. That's called the what now? The separatist what?
I just call it the separatist conspiracy war theme. You know, it's just this kind of like conspiracy theme that plays. It plays 11 times throughout the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's kind of a Kamino da 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 that plays six times. There's, you know, the Force theme I mentioned plays eight times, the Emperor's theme three times, the Imperial March, which a lot of people have been talking about recently. Oh, we don't know if we want the Imperial March in Rogue One. Well, the Imperial March is all over Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. You know,
it so, is. Oh, yeah. I only can think of two instances when it's used in Attack of the Clones. That's when Anakin has his hissy fit and he throws the can and says, Obi-Wan's holding me back. You know, you hear the strains or the chords there in the background. And then, of course, the big reveal of the clone army on Coruscant as they're deploying to war.
Yeah, that's a huge statement at the end of the movie.
Huge.
But there's,
that's really saying the Empire is back. Even though not by name right now, the Empire is back.
Yeah. I think the holding me back scene that you're thinking is the actually the I killed them all in the garage scene, his confession to Padme after he slaughters the Tuskens.
Yeah.
You hear it there three times. You know, I killed them all. I hate them. I'm a Jedi. I know better than this. You hear it when the slaughter happens. You hear, you know, Yoda feels the Tusken slaughter through the Force and he goes, pain, suffering, I feel. You hear it there. And then you hear it super subtly in the background. You know, if the prophecy is true, your apprentice is the only one who could bring Force back into balance. You know, when they're talking in the Jedi Temple and Yoda's floating on his little chair, it's super, super subtle and low in the mix. You can barely hear it. But six times in that movie. And we'll talk about it. It's all over Revenge of the Sith. I don't want to give numbers for Sith yet today, but since we're talking about the Imperial March, you hear it 13 times in Revenge of the Sith. 13
And that
times.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, because you actually witnessed the birth of the Empire.
Yes.
And so you have to feature the theme. Can I say the Separatist conspiracy war theme, as we call it? I am not a fan of that music.
No, doesn't do
it
for you.
Is that fair to say? I mean, it's sure. just, it does convey an emotion, but I find as a piece of music, as a composition, and here I am critiquing the great John Williams, but I just find it to be really dull and bland.
It's a very subtle trail of breadcrumbs, isn't it? And it's never really, I mean, and it's almost like Kylo Ren. It's just a little motif. Bum, bum, dun, 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 dun. It's never really developed into a theme. It's just kind of like a little signature reminder that something's not right, you know? And I think the reason it's subtle is because we're still supposed to not give away what they realize in episode three, right? Mace Windu in episode three says, you know, I sense a plot to destroy the Jedi, right? He says it in the war room in the Jedi temple, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not until that movie that you're really supposed to sense it. In the first movie, you know that war is coming, or the second movie, Attack of the Clones, war is coming, and you don't know why, and it just seems mysterious. And John Williams really holds back and focuses on the love theme. But you're right, it doesn't do much other than just kind of go, you know, something is askew here. And here's da-da-da-da-da-da. That's all it does. And they never use it again. They never use it in Revenge of the Sith, and certainly not in the classic trilogy or sequel trilogy. So maybe they agree with you. Maybe it was just a little storytelling device just for that movie. Hey, there's something not right. And that thing that's not right is, you know, Dooku and the creation of a clone army. Like, there's so much that happens in Clones. It's like, what the heck was that? There's a clone army? Like, you know, Dooku is a Sith Lord. He was a Jedi. You know, they swear at the top of the movie he could never do anything. You know, Dooku is not behind your assassination attempt, you know? But yeah, it's not great. It's not that it's not great. It's just not remarkable, I would say.
It's unremarkable. That's fair enough. And a lot of times, David, I bring up things that I might be critical of, because then hearing you sort of analyze it and break it all down helps me go back and approach this material with different ears, a different set of ears. So I always appreciate that. It's not like I'm trying to be the angry fanboy critiquing the movies and the music we love.
Yeah, I would say it's nothing more than an eyebrow raise, right? That's really all the music's doing there. That's the cue, right? Like, there's something weird going on. And that's all that it's trying to do.
I don't get the eyebrow, though. I wish I had the eyebrow. I don't get the eyebrow. It feels flat to me. And in movies like Star Wars, even with little transitioning things, even with things that are, you know, underneath the current and everything, I like it all to sort of give me the lift in some way, the Star Wars high in some way, even when what's going on the screen might be dramatic, it might be tragic, but still, I find you get the Star Wars high throughout the whole thing, and Williams providing the oxygen for that helps push that along. And the Separatist conspiracy war theme, as we've simply named that piece.
Yeah, right. Really simple.
It doesn't apply to that sort of criteria for me, but that doesn't really matter. It's such a minor piece of music in a minor key, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's a tiny thing, but I do think Attack of the Clones is interesting in that it is so dominated by Across the Stars. And other than that, you know, its second biggest theme is this super subtle little conspiracy motif, right? Other than that, you know, you just get little things here and there, a little bit of the Emperor, a little bit of the main title, but the main title is mostly in the main title at the opening and in the end credits. And that's really it. Other than that, you get the main title once, and that's in a music edit that comes from the episode one, Qui-Gon Obi battle versus the battle droids, you know, at the top of, atop of Phantom Menace in the middle of the Battle of Geonosis. Other than that, it's all across the stars. And I want to use this, Jimmy, to segue into what I'm hoping you and I can discuss today about episode three, which is we never got into the heart of Anakin and Padme and how this turns him to the dark side. And I want to just kind of walk through that section because some of the most gorgeous, most profound, most wonderfully performed music in the episode three soundtrack is covering Anakin's transition. And it's so tragic. And they're some of my most favorite pieces of Star Wars music, and also, of course, from the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack. I wanted to start with a piece called Padme's Ruminations, which is what you were bringing up. You brought up that scene where they're staring across from each other. They don't know it, but, you know, Anakin's in the Jedi Temple in the, you know, in the Jedi Council room, and Padme's in her apartment, and they're just staring at each other across the orange, you know, sunburnt sky.
Yes, and you hear the female vocalist doing the solo.
Yes,
it was very haunting. That's how I think of this piece and that whole sequence to begin with from the film. It's just haunting in nature, and John Williams provides that sense of dread so beautifully with this track.
Yeah, let's take a listen. It's worth mentioning that this is kind of a montage piece. It's wordless, almost soundless. Just, you know, this is from the soundtrack. This isn't actually the movie.
David, what are we hearing right there?
That's all synthesizer.
Sating drone.
Yeah. And here comes the wailing woman. Or keening or ululating. We've never heard anything like this in Star Wars.
It's almost like the Star Wars version of Pink Floyd's Great Gig in the Sky.
Now, he does something interesting coming up. Right here. Listen to the melody up top. The little cross of stars are laced in there, right? Fascinating piece. I mean, here you have this montage in the middle of the film. You've never heard anything else like it, right? And you have this wailing woman. Why, Jimmy? Why?
Well,
exactly. Well, it's hard to say, right?
You want to, you know, have that sense of dread. The wailing woman. What does she represent? What is she supposed to represent to the film itself? I mean, it's more than just John Williams saying, "Oh, that sounds cool." Maybe she represents, you know, just the downfall of democracy. I don't know.
I would take it. I think it's personal. I think it's deeply personal rather than, you know, political. I think it's between those two.
Yes.
You know, I mean, to me, how does it make you feel? I mean, does it fill you with dread? Does it make you kind of understand, you know, the looks on their faces? I mean, it's such an interesting choice. I guess I'm just wondering why, because it's such a bold choice for Star Wars.
Well,
I don't really have an answer, actually. So this isn't a trick question. I'm actually just wondering how it makes you feel.
Well, like I said, before we even heard the track, I mean, it's just haunting in nature. And what it really does is it creates that character moment between Anakin and Padme. Again, Lucas leaning on the music really to bring to life the connection between those two characters. And oh boy, I wonder why that that female vocalist, she isn't like signing on the convention circuits and stuff, you know. Yeah. You know, you never see that, do you? You never know who these musicians are, do you, when it comes to these soundtracks. I would love to know who she is. I want to know her name. And I want to get her on the show.
Yeah.
But it's but back to just like the raw emotion that that music provides to the scene. I mean, that's just it. It provides the emotion. Otherwise, you just have two actors staring.
Yeah.
And what does that do? What does that do? You don't get that sense of the conflict of the building devastation that's about to happen. I mean, you know, when you hear that music, you know something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, if you put love music there, right? I mean, it would be a very different scene if you suddenly cut in Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes, right?
You see, this is something that maybe we can do at a show sometimes when we have a screen and some video. We can maybe even play with this scene and apply maybe Across the Stars to it or something, just to see if it really does shift your emotional appreciation of what's going on between the two characters.
I think it absolutely does. I mean, it is a very, very specific and strong, strong choice for Star Wars. And like really took me back when I first heard it, I remember. And, you know, there's something so painful about it. I mean, it really is, you know, the idea of women wailing or the ululating, and, you know, it goes back, you know, goes back into ancient history. Right. And, it's funny because at that time in 2005, it was really, really popular in film scores, right? So, I mean, one thing that I can offer is there's a little bit of a film score trend in using that, which I don't think, I mean, we've seen this before. You know, I do think that certain movies have influenced Star Wars over the years. You know, Gladiator used it really liberally in their score, which I believe was Hans Zimmer. And that had won, you know, that movie was like Best Picture and I believe in 2000. I mean, that was a huge movie just a few years before. Howard Shore had used a lot of kind of solo vocal effects in all three of his Lord of the Rings movies. And here you're using it as a montage to kind of show the separation of the two, the pain, right? I mean, the metaphor is really strong, right? Anakin is separated geographically and emotionally from Padme. He has to make a tough decision. And he feels far apart from her. He feels like he's going to lose her. He feels like if he stays where he is in this hollow Jedi council chamber, which he feels completely separated from, it's empty. He's in there empty. If he stays there, he is forever going to be separated from Padme. However, if he makes the decision to side with Palpatine, maybe he can close that gap. And I feel like that wailing, it's part Padme, but it's also part Anakin, right? I mean, it's just this like guttural sound from your soul of just grief that is going to make him turn his back on the Jedi Order. He just got back from war, from the Outer Rim sieges, right? And now he's going to do this?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Like it's, you have to have some sort of emotionally, I just can't take this anguish moment in order to justify him getting in a speeder and going to Palpatine's office and stopping the arrest or even worse, the execution of Palpatine by Mace Windu. And that's what this sequence I feel like is designed to do.
And the music is so important to that.
It's all music.
If music doesn't work, this scene does not work. This sequence does not fly with the audience unless the music is hitting the nail on the head.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we move on from there and we go into the actual scene where he stops Mace Windu. There's not a lot of thematic material in that fight between Mace Windu and Palpatine. It's kind of just action music. But of course, once it happens, once he actually goes in and crowns him Darth Vader, right? Things really change at that point, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Then you see Order 66.
Do you mind if we play a little bit of this, a little bit of this fight here? So it's a lot of brass, a lot of creepy strings, right? Almost just pure horror. Like you're in a moment of action, so like thematic material, you wouldn't even be able to focus on thematic material. You're just like on the edge of your seat, like what's going to happen here? And you go forward here. Oh yeah, Ian McDiarmid's vocals.
It's so funny just so to good. Hear it.
And then he's backed into a corner. Just big trumpets, right? No themes.
No, just a bunch of brass horn stabs going on there. And
yep.
And for all.
Building to a fanfare.
He must stand trial.
He has control.
There you finally get it, right? This is the moment where he's like arguing and you get the force theme, right?
Wow.
I can't hold on any longer.
I am going to end this once and for all.
You can't.
Here it is. You can't.
He must stand trial.
He tries the good way first.
Of the Senate and the courts. He's too dangerous to be left alive.
I'm too weak.
What's he gonna do?
Please.
The strings are working against the low brass here.
He must live.
What's he gonna do? Game time.
I need him.
Finally comes out, I need him.
No. No.
My God. Now he's crossed the threshold.
Oh my goodness.
And it's just, you know, the rest of that theme plays out, or the rest of that scene plays out with, you know, the Emperor's theme and the Imperial March.
Fulfilling your destiny, Anakin. Become.
There's the Emperor's theme.
Learn to use the dark.
Now we know Sidious is Palpatine and Palpatine is Sidious. If there was ever any doubt.
I'll do whatever you ask.
Good.
So good.
Just help me save Padme's life. I can't live without her.
To cheat death. Power only one has achieved.
This is just mysterious.
Work together. I know we can discover the secret.
Fascinating and horrifying at the same time.
To your teachings.
And here we get the coronation of Darth Vader. Hinted at a little bit.
The Force is strong with you. A powerful Sith you will become. Henceforth,
here it comes, Jimmy.
Known as Darth Vader.
Thank you, my master.
Right.
There you get it.
My Lord, they put a lot of filter on Ian McDiarmid's voice in that sequence.
Yeah,
I don't
lot.
Think you hear his voice as processed anywhere else in any of the films, you know, as the Emperor, you know, in this film and Return of the Jedi. You don't hear that sort of vocal treatment going on for him like you do in that sequence. For the rest of the film, it's pretty much just without all that special sauce, you know?
All the films it's without that special sauce. It's almost like this is his moment of his self-actualizing moment, the moment that he can finally reveal his true face, you know? Mm. It's an interesting question. Is Palpatine damaged by the lightning and that's why his face turns? Or does the lightning damage him so he can only keep up the no longer keep up the disguise?
Yeah.
And that is his true face, has been his true face all along, right? We don't really know. But the idea is that now the dark side is just swelling in the room. He's found a new apprentice. It's almost quasi-religious, you know, in this super evil way. You know, that the energy of the dark side and Sith for thousands of years are swirling through the room through this coronation as Palpatine is just letting his victory, you know, overwhelm him and Vader, you know, Vader's power, you know, coming into the room and the decision that Anakin makes. It's a great, great moment, but it is absolutely crossing the threshold. And from this point, musically, we hear kind of the cost of that, you know, the sorrow, the lamentation, the just the horrible deeds that he commits. And this leads us really into Order 66 and Anakin's betrayal, right? We hear, you know, we hear him in the 501st march on the Jedi Temple. That's really just kind of a reuse of Episode 2 arena music. Ba-ba-bum-ba-ba-ba-bum-bum. But where it really starts is in a cue on the soundtrack that's called Anakin's Betrayal, right? And that cue is just so dark. And this leads us to yet another montage. I mean, yes, there's sound in it, but really it's a music montage. Like Episode 3 is like Rocky 4. It's a montage. Just kidding. But let's take a look at Anakin's betrayal here. And just take a listen to this. Again, I feel like this is very inspired by the work that Howard Shore had done in the Lord of the Rings movies. That sort of darkness creeping into Star Wars, and really, really remarkably so. Really well done.
So, David, where exactly are we picking up in the film itself at the beginning of this track?
This is the beginning of Order 66, the montage of all the Jedi getting wiped out. Right.
That's what I thought. So we're going to cover a lot of ground here. So Anakin's betrayal.
We're covering basically from his decision to his dark acts. So, you know, what I'd like to cover is all the way from Padme's ruminations through the betrayal and into his dark deeds. You know, really the meat of the middle of this film here. Let's take a look. Just a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. Now, what's really interesting if you keep listening, you start hearing a couple things. You start hearing a little Across the Stars in here. Right? Right there.
Yep.
Right here. I could go on and on and on. You know, it's Across the Stars, But it's also got a little of Dies Irae in it. Do you remember when we talked about Dies Irae all the way back in episode 4?
That was a long time ago, David. So can you remind me and the listening audience who...
There is an old... Yes, there is an old part of a mass called Dies Irae. And musically, the phrasing was this. Right? And you hear that a lot in the original Star Wars. Right? The text of this Latin mass, Dies Irae, Dies Irae, Solvit Saeclum, Unfavilla, whatever, Teste David Cum Sibylla. Anyway, it's Day of Wrath. The Day of Wrath, that day will dissolve the world in ashes as foretold by David and the Sibyl. How much tremor there will be when the judge will come investigating everything strictly. So it's Judgment Day. It's Judgment Day. That's what Dies Irae is. It's Day of Wrath, you know. It's the end of the world. It's basically, you know, basically what it is. And that's what you're hearing. And it's interesting that, you know, across the stars, right? He kind of, is it across the stars or is it Dies Irae? Well, it's both, right? It's this neat little thing that he does in there to kind of let you know, like, this is the end. I mean, this is, there's no turning back. He's not only is our Jedi being slaughtered by clones all over the galaxy, but he's also going in and he's killing younglings, right? I mean, there's no turning back. This is his point of no return. This is where he becomes, you know, space Hitler. This is it. He, you know, he's so far down a road using war and what is right and what is wrong to justify murder, right? You know, that sort of gray area of war. Like this is an act of war. It's wartime, you know, morality. But really what's going on is horrible. It's evil, right? And in his head, he's doing it for love. I mean, that's just what is so poignant about this piece, you know? And it is a continuation of that wailing, you know? Suddenly you've got a whole choir wailing, you know? It starts off as a singular voice and that wailing is growing in Anakin, in the galaxy, in the Force, maybe, you know? In the Ashla and the Bendu. It's growing, right? And I forgot to mention, you know, he also used this to great effect, this kind of ululation in his Munich score just a couple years before, which might be why he thought about bringing it again into Revenge of the Sith. But it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. Despite the horrible things you're seeing on screen, it is a very pretty piece, actually, you know, with the chorus especially pushes it over the top, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And I want to play a little bit more. How are we doing on time, Jimmy?
We're doing all right. Yeah.
We're doing all right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is just really, I feel like, the heart of the tragedy here. And this is John Williams basically taking over as storyteller in my mind. I mean, he really is the storyteller here with George. His work,
it happens so often too.
It does. And Revenge of the Sith is just such a showcase for him, especially here in the middle of the film. Excuse me. It's all John Williams. They let the sound effects duck down and get really kind of reverberated out and filtered. And they just let the music carry the tragedy and it just soars through the soundtrack, you know, another really interesting scene. And just heartbreaking scene is scored by another piece called Anakin's Dark Deeds. And in fact, that on the soundtrack is an edit of two different moments in the film. But when Obi-Wan breaks the news to Padme, you know, he sees the recording and he goes to Padme and he tells her, like, this is bad. Like, this has happened. He's turned to the dark side and she doesn't believe it. You get this melody that just repeats again and again, and again, this Dark Deeds melody. And it's this one. Right. It just kind of goes and goes. And it just happens again and again and again. And I want to play you this scene. And I want to just, this from the soundtrack, not from the soundtrack, from the movie. And just let's take a listen together to the effect that this piece, you know, just sang the same melody bit over and over and over again, what does it do to your psyche here? And how does it kind of wear you down? How does it feel? I'm going to just play this right here. It's at about the 90-minute mark.
Padme, I need your help. He's in grave danger.
From the Sith?
From himself.
Now listen for this melody to come in here.
Padme, Anakin has turned to the dark side.
You're wrong.
There it is once.
How could you even say that?
I have seen
a
security hologram of him killing younglings.
Third
Not
time.
Anakin. He couldn't.
So that's time number three, right?
He was deceived by a lie. We all were.
Four.
It appears that the Chancellor is behind everything, including the war. Palpatine is the Sith Lord we've been looking for.
Five.
After the death of Count Dooku, Anakin became his new
apprentice.
Panic
starts to swell. Six. Sinking in now.
I don't believe you.
Seven. He's just staying down this road, John Williams, just giving it to us again and again and again.
Padme.
Eight.
I must find
him. When has he ever done this before?
Yeah, wow.
You're going to kill him, aren't you?
Nine.
Keep going, John.
He has become a very great threat.
10.
Wow, there he goes.
Not straying from this. Not straying. Key change. 11. Twelve.
Anakin is the father, isn't he?
13. Eh, 12 and a half. 13.
I'm so sorry.
14. Times we get that. It's sunk in now. This guy's evil. And just to prove that he's evil to the audience, we're going to show him with his eyes red, the tear in his eye, looking out across the landscape at what he's become. Big finish.
M'lady, let me come with you.
14 times in a row, we get that little theme. And it just grows and grows and grows and grows. When else has he really done that like that? John Williams.
I think, you know, the orchestra was probably like he fell asleep at the podium or something. And so they just kept repeating it. And then they decided, well, it works. No, that's not how it went down at all. This is
yeah.
John Williams isn't winging it at all.
Yeah.
He certainly isn't falling asleep at the podium. But, repetition in the theme like that, you know, in one sequence playing over and over and over and over again. David, you're the expert here for sure, but I certainly can't think of any other time he's done that.
I think it's almost like a musical version of your mind caught in a loop, you know, in depression or anxiety or fear or shock. Your mind loops in this kind of like maddening way, you know, and mm-hmm. it's like this almost like this pit in your stomach that's growing, you know, in Padme. You know, it's like this is real, you know. Anakin's love of his life has just been, the father of your unborn child is a monster. That's basically what he's come. I need your help. And so mm-hmm. now she's torn. How do I protect the man I love versus do the right thing? So what does she ultimately decide to do? She decides to go and try and save him herself because she has to. She has to find out for herself, right? But this it's just this gut-wrenching musical moment. To me, the music is what makes that scene work. But yeah, 14 times in a row. Bum, bum, you know. What is it? Yeah, it's here. And it's just, you know, and it just builds and builds and changes keys.
That sounded great on the piano right there.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. It's a huge, just pure sorrow, you know, pure tragedy. You know, it is it's the price being paid for Anakin's dark deeds, you know, and it builds to actually then seeing the monster that the sorrow is all about at the end of the queue with that wonderful bum, 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 bum. You know, I think the middle of this film sets up the end conflict, which we'll talk about in the next volume. So well, I would argue that, you know, and Revenge of the Sith is my favorite of the three prequels in terms of, you know, how it comes across as a well-made movie. The Phantom Menace, I just adore, but the Revenge of the Sith is just such a well-crafted, piece of art, really. And, to me, musically, John Williams is the most successful element in telling the story of Anakin's transition from hero to monster.
And you'll no arguments from me here. And it's just in those three tracks, Padme's Ruminations, Anakin's Betrayal, Anakin's Dark Deeds. You're covering a lot of ground where some momentous things are happening in the saga, from Order 66 to the Emperor claiming control of the galaxy and branding it an empire, the death of democracy, to Anakin on his killing spree, ending with him on the planet Mustafar, reflecting on what he had done, and a single tear coming down his yellow Sith eyes, coming out of his yellow Sith eyes.
Well, and that that tear is really, I'm glad you brought up that tear, because I think it's really poignant. Like, you know, in episode one, Yoda says, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. And starting with Padme's Ruminations, you're hearing more suffering than Anakin is able to bear. He just can't bear it anymore. The suffering is just massive. And what he does through his anger and his hate, and it's mostly his fear of losing Padme, is he creates so much more suffering. And even he's not immune to it. He thinks he's doing the right thing in order to eliminate it, but actually it just is creating more, you know, and it's creating suffering in Obi-Wan. It's creating suffering in Padme. It's creating suffering, you know, within himself. And musically, you just really hear that suffering through the middle of this movie, before the hate takes over again which gets us kind of to Battle of Heroes and just the kind of epic struggle between good and evil. We talked a little bit about Battle of the Heroes, in volumes a little while ago. We will touch on it again next time. But really, really wanted to bring this up today and just talk about the middle of the film. Talk about musically what happened here. Did you hear kind of the Howard Shore Lord of the Rings in there a little bit? Just a little bit of that influence?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
I think that doesn't take away from it at all. I think it's just kind of, you know, the movie existed in the time it existed. And I think it's always interesting to look at kind of the creative conversation happening around when the movie was released. I think that's what makes Star Wars the original so special, is it was such a departure from everything happening around it. But, you know, John Williams is an active film composer. And we've talked before about how a lot of the music in Attack of the Clones is probably influenced by Harry Potter. We've talked about that throughout the saga. I do think that those really successful films, again, Return of the King, Best Picture in 2003, musically, those are wonderful films. I love those scores. I think Howard Shore did an incredible job. Very different stylistically from John Williams. But some of that influence, I think, crept into the tragedy of Revenge of the Sith, which probably of all the Star Wars films, tonally shares most with the Lord of the Rings movies. The Barrow from Munich or Troy or what was the other movie we talked about? The Gladiator, right? Of the Wailing Woman, you know, which has been around a lot, but was really, really fashionable in the early to mid 2000s. Was being used a lot.
Yeah, you know, that is featured in Gladiator, isn't that?
It's all over the place. It's all
it
over
sure
Gladiator.
It sure is.
Which again, Best Picture in 2000, I believe.
Absolutely.
So it is a sign of the times, but it is really effectively done. And the lacing of Across the Stars through the wailing, You know, and the synths, it's got this like sharp pain sound to it. It's sharp. That's all I can think is like, it cuts. It's just emotionally cuts, you know? I love the themes that we play today or the music that we play today and can't wait for more.
I can't either. And I love the idea of stripping the sequence where Padme and Anakin are having their internal struggles during the Padme's rumination sequence. And I would love to replace that music with maybe some other tracks from Star Wars just to kind of illustrate how important the music is to that scene and how it really draws us into the chemistry and connection between those two characters. You mentioned there might be a Peter Gabriel song that would work well there.
No, it would not work well at all is what I was okay. saying. Like, could you imagine like, "Oh, my instincts," you know, in your eyes, you know, when they're all looking at each other. You know, I was thinking of that movie.
We're doing that, though, to show how
awful it would be.
How awful the music, you know, just with the wrong decision. How terrible.
I was comparing it.
Peter Gabriel, you know, you could just see Lucas telling the editors, what?
Yeah, I think that there's a scene with Cusack and a boombox. Give Anakin a boombox. Just, John, no, can you put that in?
Being too influenced by a certain era.
Yeah.
But,
well, like that movie, Say Anything,
I never
right?
considered how Lord of the Rings, and obviously the Lord of the Rings trilogy, extremely influential at the beginning of the century. And I just never really considered how that influence may have seeped into Star Wars, and especially the music of Star Wars. Now, of course, the Harry Potter thing, it's easy to draw that connection because Williams was working on that project as well. But Lord of the Rings, I'd never really considered sort of like the cultural impact that film was having and the impact it was having on the industry as far as filmmaking goes. I never considered how that might have seeped into Star Wars, and you really opened my eyes to that big time.
Yeah, I think that, you know, tonally, especially the beginning of Anakin's betrayal, right? This thing right here feels like Lord of the Rings to me. As Obi-Wan and Yoda are basically looking at the damage in the Jedi Temple.
You can see Frodo and Samwise walking around with this music playing in the background.
It's Galadriel and Lothlorien. You know, it's definitely there. What's interesting, though, is the contrast between this sorrow and then what you get here when he's wiping out the leaders of the Separatists. Which, you know, Lord of the Rings, I mean, to me, that sounds like The Phantom Menace, but Lord of the Rings had moments like that, too. So, again, a creative conversation. You know, Peter Jackson and George Lucas are close. You know, the guys at Skywalker went out to New Zealand to mix those movies. There's a lot of creative conversation happening back and forth there, but I think that's a good thing. It's kind of a natural thing. And there are lots of moments in the Lord of the Rings movies where they use a solo vocal and cut everything out and just have this solo vocal, a lot of times a boy soprano or something like that, in order to give you this really poignant moment of something huge and dramatic happening. There's a little bit of that fashion in Revenge of the Sith. I think it works beautifully, and I think that if any of the 6-7 films needed it, Sith needed it. It is an opera. It really is. It's a silent film, and it's told musically, and I think it works really, really beautifully.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. I mean, this is something that could be in danger of becoming cliche if not executed properly.
Yes.
And I don't find that at all with the way it gets executed in not only Revenge of the Sith, but in the Lord of the Rings films, like you brought up, you know? But like I said, it could be something dangerous to play with, because if you don't pull it off the right way, it'll come off as being flat and pandering. You know, you need everything to work together to have the most satisfying film watching experience, in my opinion. So
it's used very lightly and only used once.
They don't overdo it. So
yeah, and it's refreshing at this point, right? And it's also like, hey, we've been waiting two movies to earn this moment. and then you get it, and I think it works. And then you don't get it in the other films. So I think it's great. You know, it goes there, and then it goes straight back into Star Wars. It's using that flavor in order to tell a story, and it grabs your ear after listening to so much orchestral classic John Williams Star Wars. Suddenly, you get a moment of something different, and you go, "Whoa, that's a very bold choice." And I think that the story warrants it.
Yes, for sure. Well, this is good. We're really sinking our teeth into Revenge of the Sith, and we're going to get together in a couple of weeks and talk more Sith. So I'm so happy that we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yes.
And I'm really thankful that our listening audience has been so patient with us, but obviously The Force Awakens required our immediate attention upon its release. And it's something we're still digging deep into. And I don't think our discussions about that soundtrack is over with either, but we definitely want to focus in on this amazing masterpiece, really, of a soundtrack that Williams created for episode 3. We really want to focus on this as we ramp up activity heading toward Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And next time on Star Wars Oxygen,
more Revenge of the Sith to give us a previously.
Next time on Star Wars Oxygen.
that's good.
We're gonna have more Revenge of the Sith. I want to talk about the end of the movie. We've talked about it a little bit, but really break down from moment to moment what happens here, all the way into the end credits, and how it wraps. What at that point in 2005 was a 6-film saga. How it just wraps it into a nice little bow and really bridges the gap between 3 and 4. I want to talk about that. And then I want to just blow out the theme tracker and talk about all the different themes by the numbers on the next volume for episode 3. But more than that, Jimmy, I've actually gone in with all 7 films and done a comparison and a theme count across all 7 films to find out what in Star Wars at this point sticks out the most in terms of themes. All that and more on the next Star Wars Oxygen.
Cannot wait. Well, thank you so much, David. That was really great. Learned a lot again, as always. And so thank you for taking us on this amazing musical tour. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this time around for Star Wars Oxygen.